This is a disclaimer for you, the listener. This podcast comes with darkness, gruesome, bizarre, and downright weird stories. You've been warned. Welcome to a podcast that brings you nothing but scary stories.
Scary stories.
Whether you believe
or don't believe,
you will find this podcast disturbingly, crazily weird. Pay attention. You are about to hear some of the most creepiest encounters the world brings.
Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scary Stories on a Stormy Night. I thank you guys for listening and tuning in each week. It means a lot. It means a lot because these episodes take quite some time to record and put together and edit. So I really do appreciate you guys. Don't forget to jump over on the Facebook page, Scary Stories on a Stormy Night. Yes, we have a Facebook page. Head over there, follow and like. And also don't forget to like and follow this podcast, whatever platform you are listening to. So just hit that little like button and let's get in to this week's scary stories. After a small safety issue in my middle school, my friend and I hid in the bathroom. When we came out for a few minutes later, our entire student body had disappeared for an hour. Then they reappeared as if nothing happened. I went to a really shitty middle school. The building itself was made in 1920s. It had five main buildings: the cafeteria, the main hall, music and fine arts, mechanicals, and of course, the gym. Each building was connected by these poorly built metal roofs so that you could just walk between the buildings and not get rained on. But it also meant that you could see if people were walking between classes. Teachers would be able to see if a kid was just lingering outside and not going to class. I was in the 8th grade. In my science classroom, where we all heard and felt an explosion. Sandy Hook had just happened a few months before, so everybody was on edge. The principal came on to the intercom and said the code phrase that meant everyone was to evacuate the building. For the content for the non-Americans, after the series of school shootings, some public schools decided to have a code phrase that would mean different things. Instead of saying, "Hey, there's a shooter up in here," so they'd say "Eagle's Nest" or "Cooper's Field." There were multiple phrases, and they each meant something different. The only ones I remember were "evacuate," "hide." And then the code was the drill. You could only return inside the building when the appropriate phase was said again. This time meaning the coast was clear. So our principal said the evacuate code. And although we had practiced it, all hell broke loose. It was every man for himself. people were pushing each other and teachers were trying to come to some control, but it just didn't work. Students started being trampled on and there were screams. My friend, Katie, pulled us into the girls' restroom. And we decided to hide in there until the crowd had calmed down. The fire alarm went off. You couldn't hear any screams of any of the students. Then the sprinklers came on. Kate and I were soaked. After a few minutes, we both went into the hall. The alarm still blaring and water everywhere. It was as if nothing had happened. The hallways were clear. No sign of previous chaos. We didn't really care that much, so we ran out of the back doors to the designated safety area. A park in the neighbourhood just across from the school. But as we got closer, we could see nobody was there. We both assumed we got the location wrong, even though they had drilled it into us since the beginning of the year. But we had a big school, so we had multiple safety areas. We went to the next one, the parking lot by the football field. We walked around the entire school to get there, but we saw nobody. Not a single person. The alarms were still going off, but it looked like nothing had happened. There were still cars in the parking lot, so we knew teachers hadn't left, but we couldn't see anybody. A feeling of vertigo set over me, and I threw up on the football field. Katie rubbed my back and said she would call her mum. I didn't have a phone yet, and Katie had one of those ladybug phones that could only call her mum and the police. So Katie's mum picked up and she cried, telling her what had happened. Katie's mum said she would call my parents to come and pick us up. She told us to stay where we were and that she would be here soon. About 30 minutes passed. I'm not exactly sure on the time, but definitely should not have taken Katie's mum that long to get to us. Katie called again, but her mum didn't pick up. She tried again and again, still nothing. We talked about calling the police, but we didn't know if we'd get into trouble. If something was really wrong, then the police would have already been here. And looking back, we really should have just called the police. But we had this weird idea that we'd be in trouble, so we stayed put and waited for Katie's mum. On about the hour mark, the fire alarm turned off, the period bell rang, and a few seconds later, students came walking out of the buildings, casually heading to their next classes. Like nothing was wrong. We were closest to the gym building, and my brother had that period. I called out to him, and he came running over, along with his coach. They were completely dry, like they hadn't been around the sprinklers. Both Katie and I were crying, asking what had happened. They didn't answer. They just took us to the school nurse, who then called our parents. I kept asking the nurse what happened. There was a boom, and we were told to evacuate. She said that there was a simple science experiment gone wrong in one of the other science classrooms. They wanted to make sure there wasn't any chemical leak or anything, so they evacuated the school. She told us that she understands why we would be scared, but we should have gone to the designated safety area, which was the park in the neighbourhood across the street. We said we did. Over and over again, we told her that's where we went. But she tried to calm us down. But I could tell she didn't believe us. My parents came to pick me up first. I asked them if Katie's mum had called them to tell them what happened. She said Katie's mum never called her. I told my parents what happened, and I don't think they thought I was lying. I had never lied about anything before, but they definitely didn't believe me. Katie stayed at home from school for the rest of the week. I got my parents' permission to use my home phone to call Katie. I asked her if she was okay, and if her mum was okay, since she never came out to get us. She told me that her mum never got a call from her. Katie's mum had come to the school when the school called. Katie was angry that her mum saying that she didn't call her. And Katie's mum said to her on the phone that she was on her way. Her mum was so confused, telling her that she only got a call from school. Katie didn't believe her. She had to show Katie her phone history to prove that she only got the one call, and that was from school. Katie's phone showed the call logs, but Katie's mum's didn't. We didn't talk about it. We never had a discussion or anything. But neither Katie or I ever talked about it again, not publicly. My memory faded. I like to believe that it might have been a dream, or maybe a shared delusion, or just that Kate and I made it up for attention, because those things I could accept. But there are times when I remember how long the fire alarm was, how scared I was when I saw no one in the safety area, and the vertigo feeling that made me feel like I was dying. I don't know what happened, but I have never felt the same way again as I did in that 1 hour. This happened to me when I was 13. For some background, I had to switch to another school that was further away from home. And now, instead of just taking only one bus, I had to take a bus, train, and then another bus to get there. With my longer commute, I had to leave my house around 7 a.m. if I wanted to be at school for 8:30. For the most part, I never worried about safety, since public transport was busy in the morning. As I got off the train, I had to cross a big bridge in order to reach the area of the different bus routes. There were three major ones, but it didn't matter which one I got, as they all passed the school before breaking off in separate directions. So one morning, as I was waiting for one of the buses to show up, some random construction worker, also waiting for the bus, started talking to me. He looked about mid-30s. I didn't think much of it, as I was easy to have a conversation with. I started seeing him more frequently at the bus area, and I began to find it a bit strange, because he would always compliment me. He'd say, "I have a cool bag or a nice jacket." But then he'd never say anything to raise any red flags. Things started to get weird pretty quickly, and he would start complimenting me on my features, saying that I had pretty eyes or a cute smile. I was beginning to get a bit uncomfortable, but again, I also brushed it off and chose to start avoiding him. I never thought too much of my own safety, as there were people around and he had a cell phone just in case I had to call my parents or the police. I didn't see the guy for a few days, so I began to think I was in the clear and forgot about him. Then things really began to escalate. I was sitting by myself with my earbuds in, when suddenly, someone tapped me on my shoulder and sat beside me. It was the guy. And now he's talking to me like we are friends. I was really uncomfortable. Tried to dismiss him and went to walk away to the other side of the bus area. But that's when he said something that really caught me off guard. He just casually turned to me, like it was nothing, and says, "What would you do if I tied you up and never let you go?" I was genuinely appalled. I got off the bench and started to walk away. He got up and started to follow behind me. And thankfully, two buzzies pulled in. He, of course, followed me onto the bus. But I wasn't having any of it, so I got off and hopped on the second one. As he followed me on again, I was going to tell the bus driver I needed help. But the guy didn't. He didn't follow me on the second bus. I was so confused. I went to school, and the first thing I did was tell my friends what happened. I really didn't understand the severity of the situation at first, because I was 13. I didn't really think of these things that happen to guys. As I was telling the story, I was kind of downplaying it, because nothing bad actually happened in my eyes, and there were no real repercussions. Everyone gave me a dumbfounded stare, as no one knew what to say. Then, one of the teachers overheard me, which I'm not surprised, because I'm a loud kid. And in a look of shock, brought me to the principal's office. So I missed the entire first period of that day, explaining what happened to the principal and a police officer. My parents at first were really confused and why I didn't mention anything about this weird guy. I was driven to school the next few days, until a police officer came over to talk to me and my parents. He said they had found the guy on the transit cameras and were able to track him down and talk to him. There wasn't too much the officer could do aside from telling him to stay away from me, since he technically didn't do anything illegal. The officer did tell me that they would be monitoring the train station around that time as well, and that if the guy ever approached me or talked to me, to call 911. I saw him like two or three more times after. He never really spoke or looked at me, which I'm very thankful for. I'm just glad nothing major came of it. But this did really open my eyes about being more aware in public. My mum and dad were out of town, and I was staying with my uncle, and he was cooking something for myself. Just then, someone rang the doorbell. I opened the door, and it was a worker. There was some construction work going on in the house next door. Nobody lives there. The owners were just getting some work done in the house. And the worker came into my house to get a matchbox. I don't know why, I don't exactly know the reason why, but I gave it to him. While fetching the matchbox, I left the door open. And while I was bringing it, I saw that the man was very weirdly checking out the house. I ignored it and just felt weird. I gave him the matchbox, but he didn't just instantly go away. He stood there for almost 3 seconds holding the matchbox in his hand, just staring at me. It creeped me out a little, but I usually just ignored that kind of thing and just closed the door. I don't know why. I just peeped through the peephole to see him. He was still standing there, just staring at the door. I went inside and continued my work. 15 minutes later, the doorbell rang again. This time, my uncle checked the door. And the man was like, "Hello. Your daughter helped me so much. I just want to return the gratitude and paint one of your rooms." It sounded a little odd to my uncle. I was painting a room for a matchbox. My uncle declined the offer, but the man was reluctant. "It will only take an hour. I just want to colour her room, make it beautiful. Please, sir, one room won't take much time." Now my uncle's gut feeling was giving up. He was like, "No, this guy is something off." So he declined it one last time. And this time, when he saw him through the peephole, he too caught him staring at the door. This was hella creepy. I don't know what his intentions were, but definitely creeped me out. And my uncle. Back in the early 2000s, my friend and I were into ghost hunting. We would search out and go out to the most haunted places we could find in our area. We went to many places, but one still creeps me out to this day. This house was in Chino, in California. There was also a men's prison in this area. Back in the 80s, I believe, this guy, not sure of his name, escaped the prison and found a home to hide out in. Back in the day, this was a rural community, mostly cows with houses few and far between. The house he broke into had a family living inside, mother, father, and two kids, a boy and a girl. In a nutshell, he cut the boy's throat, killed the girl in front of the parents, then murdered them both, one in front of each other. He stayed there for a week or two before he left. All got caught. I don't remember which one. Anyway, fast forward to our ghost trip. We eventually pull up on this house. Of course, in the middle of the night. The house, even though this was years later, was still there, all fenced up, boarded up windows, and crime tape with signs saying keep out, graffiti all over the house. My friend and I found our way through the fence and into the backyard area, where a window had already had the boards removed and been busted out. A couple of us had self-defense tools in case we ran into any unsavory people, and also a camera to take pictures. There were five of us. We each went through the broken window one by one and waited for each other until we were all through. The inside of the house was completely empty, except for smashed family pictures still on the walls. Graffiti all around the inside of the house. The most creepy things were written on the walls and the ceilings of the living room. Things like, "Death is here, do not enter." The window we went through led to us right into the middle of the living room. Right behind us was the kitchen. All the pantry doors were open. As we walked through the house, we all formed into a sort of a conga line, with me at the back. We walked around the living room first, and then the kitchen. The entire time, my buddy has taken random snapshots with his camera. The same camera we have been using for all of our different haunted locations. As the lead person goes into the hallway, we stopped to look into the hallway closet to confirm a part of the story. The escaped prisoner had gruesomely sliced the little boy's throat in an attempt to kill him. Little did he know, the boy had crawled into the hall closet and held his throat, kept it from bleeding out while he watched the rest of his family get murdered right in front of him. When I opened the closet door, I would say about 70% of the carpet on the floor was soaked in old blood. It was definitely true. We continued along the hallway, In every room had super creepy and very eerie messages that left my skin crawling. We finally made it to the master bedroom where the parents were tied up. I made to watch their children die and ultimately them to be murdered in cold blood. Again, the carpet had all blood splattered all over it. The entire room just this all over sense of darkness. Like a cold pressure. It was off-putting. As you entered that room, there was a light switch to the right of the wall. Right next to it was the creepiest message of them all. It gave me tingles. I don't remember exactly what it said, but it was something around the lines of, "Do not lock anyone alone in this room. Do not do it. This is no joke. Please, for the love of God, don't." Needless to say, that creeped us all out. It didn't take us long to explore the entire house. It wasn't that big. As we made our way out, I was still in the back of the line. And my buddy with a camera was still taking the occasional photo. It was in the middle of the night and it was cold outside. Pitch black. There was one flashlight we had remembered to bring. Then, just as we were leaving the hallway, I heard a little girl moan as clear as day. It made the air on the back of my neck stand up and again gave me an instant tingle feeling. I specifically remember the next part. I remember I was going to ask the person in front of me if they heard the girl moan. But then I didn't say, because I didn't want to influence their answer. So I just said, "Did you hear something?" I remember exactly how I asked it. The person in front of me turned their head in slow motion with their eyes wide open to me. I just heard a little girl moan. We both stood in disbelief. There was no one in the house around. This place had acres of farmland. We were absolutely the only ones in the house. It scared us to death. I don't know how to explain it, but it sounded sad, with anguish. Like it came from a deep, dark place. We ran out of that house as fast as we could. One of my friends got a cut on the window. The biggest dude in the group is like 6'2". Big guy. Couldn't make it back to the car because he was so terrified that his legs just weren't moving. He was on the floor outside, crying. Saying stuff like, "The devil's in that house." One of the girls that was with us had to take him by the hand to comfort him before he could get up and get to the car. That was our expedition to anywhere haunted. A few days later, my buddy uploaded the photos to his computer. As we went through them, we noticed all the pictures, and after the house were perfectly fine and clear photos of the Cooper house, and it was filled with orbs. It was the craziest thing to see, orb floating in the middle of a room. I wish he had the photos. But it wasn't my camera. And we didn't have smartphones at the time. About 15 years or so later, maybe 2020, I randomly see a newspaper on my mum's dinner table. No one gets those anymore. Well, my mum does. And I see off to the side of the right of the front page that the escaped convict was finally put to death. Decades after everything had happened, I thought it was weird how I came to the full circle. I never see newspapers anymore. Also, from what I understand, the young boy whose throat was slit ended up in a mental institution for the rest of his life. And it still gives me tingles to this day thinking about it. And that is a complete shocking ending to this week's episode. Wow, I've really enjoyed going through these creepy stories with you. Now, hopefully you can relax, chill, and wait for next week's episode. Thank you for listening. Take it easy.